From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, you've no doubt heard it before, but in light of what happened in New York last week and what is happening in several states this week, including Virginia, it bears repeating. Elections have consequences. Given what happened in the midterm elections, we should not be surprised by this wave of pro-abortion measures that are coming out of states like New York, Rhode Island, New Mexico, and even Virginia. Sarah Perry with Family Research Council Action joins me with analysis. Then at 22 past the hour, we'll be joined by CBN reporter Chris Mitchell, who has spent the last week in northeast Syria. He'll give us the latest in the developments on the ground in Syria. Very important. You don't want to miss that interview. And the outrage prompted by the new House majority's move to remove God from the oath that witnesses take before testifying. Well, that outrage reached Capitol Hill. What was the outcome? Republican Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana joins me with the latest on the fight over So Help Me God. So Help Me God. That's next here on this edition of Washington Watch. And my plan is to take your phone calls a little bit later. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right. You know, you hear it all the time, but there's so much truth in it. Elections have consequences. When you look at what has happened last week in New York City, where we've talked about it all this week, but it wasn't contained to New York. We've seen it in Rhode Island. We've seen it in Virginia. We've seen it in New Mexico. What's behind this? Well, first, here's a clip of the governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam, discussing this earlier today, a pro-abortion bill, Listen to this.
When we talk about third trimester abortions, these are done with the consent of obviously the mother, with the consent of the physicians, more than one physician, by the way. And it's done in cases where there may be severe deformities, there may be a fetus that's non-viable. So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother. So I think this was really blown out of proportion. But again, we want the government not to be involved in these types of decisions.
All right, this was a discussion, and there's a little bit more to that, where he went on to say that men should not be involved in these discussions about abortion. Now, this took place today as a result of a very contentious committee hearing yesterday in which a delegate was pushing another one of these New York-type bills that allows for abortion up to the very last minute. Now, I'm going to give the governor there, benefit of the doubt, he's actually a physician, he's a medical doctor. Whether or not he was talking about severely deformed children that need to be resuscitated, or whether he was talking about essentially allowing a baby to die that was not wanted. Now, he needs to clarify that. But the point that he went on to make, that these are issues government should not be involved in, especially men, that I have a real issue with. Number one, a government has every right to protect its citizens, including those who are in the womb, because we're setting the course for a nation when we declare that our children are not of value. And as a man, woman, whatever you are, if you live in a country that has rejected the sanctity of human life, collectively, you pay a price for that. Joining me now to talk about this connection between the midterm elections, what we saw happen in the 2018 midterm elections, and these now rising abortion laws, which, by the way, some of them are actually challenging Roe, not from a standpoint of being too permissive of abortion, but being too restrictive. They're going the opposite direction. Join me now, Sarah Perry with FRC Action. Sarah, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Now, Sarah, we know that there's a connection between elections and policies. And I want to set the stage here for this discussion. We go back to the 2010 elections, not quite a decade ago, but as a result, really kind of in response to the pro-abortion, anti-family policies that Barack Obama pushed in his first 2 years when Nancy Pelosi was speaker back then, there was a wave of conservatism. Remember the birth of the Tea Party. And as a result, conservatives turned out en masse in the midterm elections in 2010. The result was we saw legislatures flip from Democratic control to Republican, a majority, in fact, setting records going back 80 years, to Republican control of state legislatures and state governorships. The result of that was in the last 7 years, we saw 427 pro-life bills enacted into law. And that's a significant number because that is essentially about one-third of all pro-life laws that have been passed in the last 45 years. So elections right. do have consequences, and now what we're seeing is almost the polar opposite.
Yes. In fact, I think a good way to describe it is just that. The pendulum has truly swung in the opposite direction. We saw record turnout numbers for the midterm elections in 2018. After 2 years with a very conservative president who was remaining faithful to his word, specifically, among other issues, on the issue of abortion. He's made no bones about being a pro-life president. And so as a result, Democrats in the midterm elections netted 308 collective seats. There were 82% approximately of all legislative seats in the United States up for grabs. So there was not only record turnout, there was record possibility, and Democrats really mobilized. They saw an opportunity to gain seats that would allow them not only to enact progressive legislation and get the right people into the positions in which they wanted, but organizations like People for the American Way and an organization called Flippable, which was formed by six ex-Hillary Clinton staffers after her presidential loss, worked together to identify districts at entry level, down ballot races, state legislatures as well, in which they would be able to impact the future of not only progressive legislation, but 2020 redistricting efforts after the census. So this is not only a surprising and severe swing of the pendulum in the other way, it's going to have long-term consequences. This was a very, very distinct series of losses. And two of the states that you mentioned when you were discussing the summary previously, Tony, New York and New Mexico, both were considered legislative battlegrounds, New York's Senate, New Mexico's House. Those are exactly the channels through which these extremely aggressive pro-abortion measures were being pushed.
Yeah, for instance, in New York, prior to the 2018 midterms, the New York Senate was almost split down the middle. There was 32 Democrats, 31 Republicans, but one of the the Democrats, who was a pro-family, pro-life Democrat, caucused with the Republicans, so eventually prevented any of this bad stuff. After the midterm election, it was 40-23, 40 Democrats, 23 Republicans. Now they have a run of the upper chamber. But a large part of this, Sarah, and I know that the turnout, we've obviously been the action arm of FRC involved in educating and mobilizing voters. And we did see, a high propensity of evangelicals turnout in certain elections, but across the board, it did not keep pace with the left. Part of that was complacency. Some were disgruntled. Some were disheartened. You can choose what adjective you want. But the reality is, right. when we don't show up to vote, we end up with policies like this. Virginia, another example where I just had the clip from the governor there, where another, extreme pro-abortion law being pushed there by one of the delegates. The right. GOP had a majority there of 32 seats. That was whittled down to just two in the 2017 election.
Absolutely. And in fact, the Virginia delegate who introduced the legislation, Kathy Tran, was not only supported by People for the American Way and Flippa Bowl. She is a relatively new elected official. She's been serving in her position for a year. She is precisely the face of the new arm of the Democratic Party. In fact, they are, we're looking at numbers like 253 GOP incumbents defeated in midterms. And so these incumbents have not only lost their positions, they've lost them to extremely progressive, hard left, young millennial graduates who are coming in with policies that are really extending beyond what the Democratic Party itself has for decades been known for. I mean, this is when you listen to what Governor Northam said on the radio, and when you listen to Governor Cuomo talking about how, though he's a Catholic, he was not elected as a Catholic. He was elected to be governor, and he can separate his religious beliefs from where he governs, which for you and I seems anathema to us because our faith informs everything we do. This is really sort of a trend in a larger direction, and this is a strong, progressive, empowered, and very well-organized progressive wing, and their raison d'etre right now is these pro-abortive measures. Nancy Pelosi is at the helm of this ship. She can represent exactly to the American people her positions on making her pro-choice stances the absolute governing arm of the Democratic Party, and you're seeing this sort of trickle-down effect, and part of that was the result of the midterm elections in 2018.
The, you know, there was a time when there was not a clear contrast between the parties. That is no longer the case. And what we're seeing here, I believe, in New York, in Virginia, in the Congress under the new majority in the House, is really the new Democratic Party. There is a clear contrast, and on the issue of life, it could not be clearer.
Absolutely. And what we're looking at now is an attempted codification of Roe, and in some cases beyond Roe. I think a lot of these democratically controlled state legislatures are realizing that the judicial arm of the government is no longer going to do them any favors. Trump's been very good in electing originalist judges, those judges who will interpret faithfully the nation's laws and the Constitution of the United States. And so they are relegated to making sure that their legislatures shoehorn legislation through that is specifically designed to go above and beyond what Roe permits. And so you're not just seeing abortion legislation, but extremely aggressive late-term repeal of partial birth abortion ban bills. These are worse than any of us, I think, ever anticipated we were going to see. There is absolutely a clear delineation between the parties at this point.
Sarah Perry, thanks so much for joining us. And this, if this is not a warning to evangelicals, to conservatives across the country, that they need to be informed, engaged, involved, I don't know what it would take. This is very significant stuff. Sarah, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.
Yeah, the elections have consequences. In some cases, those consequences are deadly. Folks, we cannot afford to sit on the side, to be silent, to step back. Even if it's not everything's to our liking, we've got to be engaged. All right, coming up next, a report from Syria. Chris Mitchell joins us with CBN. Don't go away.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. All right. After President Donald Trump's announcement of a pullout of U.S. troops, about 2,200 troops in Syria, a geopolitical tug of war has begun over the northeast portion of Syria. The winner could largely determine the future and the fate of the Middle East. I mean, this is quite significant, what has taken place there in the northeastern region of Syria, and most of it unknown to the Western world. Joining me now to explain what is happening on the ground is CBN News correspondent Chris Mitchell. He has spent a week over in Syria last week, traveling the country, traveling hundreds of miles, interviewing different ones, and what's really at stake there, because what's happened is religious freedom has gotten a foothold in Syria there in the Middle East, and that could reshape the entire region if it's able to prosper. Chris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to be with you.
All right, Chris, give us the rundown. Your takeaway after your takeaways after spending a week there on the ground in Syria.
Well, it was quite an extraordinary opportunity there, Tony, to go there and spend about a week and talk to military, governmental, and religious leaders. And I would say there's basically three main stories that I think that are going on right now. First of all, you mentioned the geopolitical war is after President Trump made that decision or announcement on December 19th last month that there was a tug of war between Turkey. Once some of influence in that region. They want to attack their nemesis, the Kurds. Iran wants to build a land bridge from Tehran all the way to the Mediterranean. Russia wants to expand its influence in the region. And Iran, Assad wants to go back to reclaim that land that he basically abandoned about 7 years ago. The other story is what you mentioned, religious freedom and representative government is taking a foothold in the Middle East. It's unique to the region. It's an indigenous, representative, federalist form of government. It's something that's really revolutionary, I think, here. The third story, I think, Tony, is what Christians are saying and what we heard there on the ground. They are afraid of another genocide. They're especially fearful of President Erdogan from Turkey based on two things. Historically, 1915, many of the people in that region where our ancestors, their ancestors, fled that genocide. Last year in Afrin in northwest Syria, the Turkish army, along with the Free Syrian Army, which is a group of Islamists, jihadists, took over that city, and they're replacing the population. Many atrocities we heard firsthand about that. So these main three stories are happening. It's very important. I really think it's going to determine what's going to happen in the Middle East, depending on what happens there in northeast Syria.
You know, it's quite amazing what 2,200 troops from the United States can do, essentially keeping four nations at bay that want this territory.
That's exactly right. I mean, the American flag, when it's planted, means a whole lot, and it's only 2,200 soldiers in a land that's one-third of Syria, and keeping all these nations at bay. And removing that flag, the people that we talked to, whether they were governmental leaders, military leaders, or church leaders, are saying it really puts them at peril, not only the Christians, for their literally for their very lives, but this new form of government would be at risk if the United States pulls out. And this geopolitical tug of war over this strategic portion of land here in the Middle East, having the American flag there and boots on the ground makes the difference.
You know, I've had a number of conversations. In fact, a number of these Christians from Syria have come to the United States, and they're having things, and they've reached out. In part is my role as a U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, but it appears that they fear Turkey more, Erdogan more than any of the others, and that's almost driving them into the arms of Assad.
Exactly, and that's exactly what's happening. They're afraid of Turkey and Erdogan, and they point to Afrin, what happened last year when the Turkish army captured that city, displaced many of the people there, and they have been going on for a year. Churches were burned, Bibles were burned. Some of these Free Syrian Army jihadists went door-to-door searching for Christians, especially Muslims that had converted to Christianity. So Turkey is their number one enemy. And because of that, as you said, they are negotiating right now with the Assad regime. The mediator is Russia, and they're putting pressure on them. What they're basically saying is, listen, if you align yourselves with us, then we will protect you from Turkey. And what that does, first of all, it would sort of abort what has this new representative form of government. The second thing it would do, Tony, is actually allow an access by Iran into Syria to help create this land bridge that they have dreamed of. That would bring more weapons, material, and perhaps troops into Syria, and that would threaten Israel. That would actually give right. Iranian a greater military foothold to attack the Jewish state.
Oh, and that's why they want the land bridge. They want to be able to do that, have that direct access and threat to Israel. But the untold story, Chris Mitchell, that you're telling is this representative form of government in this region of the world that is unheard of outside of Israel, but the religious freedom that has taken root in that.
It's exactly. It's really exciting story, Tony. We were in Kobani. We met with one of the leaders of the Church of the Brethren. It's the only evangelical church in Kobani. And he was telling us that church, which is now officially registered, would never have happened under the Assad regime. They have written a social contract as well to represent all of the minorities. People sometimes have the perception that this is just a Kurdish land. It's much more than that. There's Syriac Christians, Assyrians, Yazidis, all represented under this new form of government, and they make a priority, actually written in their social contract, that 40% of the representation will be from women. And that's unique in the Middle East. All this together is, I think, one of the very good stories, a good news story coming out of the Middle East right now that full out threatens that, and that's what they're telling us.
Chris Mitchell, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for joining us. I know it's late over there in Israel where you're based out of. I want to thank you, and this is something we need to explore more because it is an untold story that could radically alter the Middle East. Thanks so much, Chris. Folks, don't go away. Coming back with Mike Johnson after this.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Now, yesterday, I asked you to call your congressman and object to the possibility of taking out the phrase, so help you God, as the House committees take testimonies from various witnesses. Now, this was just stuck into the rules to be changed. Well, I want to thank you for making those calls because along with the leadership of our next guest and others, there was a kind of an epiphany took place by the Democrats overnight, and they decided not to kick God out of the committee rooms. Joining me now is Congressman Mike Johnson, who represents the 4th Congressional District of Louisiana. He is also the chairman of the Republican Study Committee. Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Always a pleasure.
All right, give us the rundown. What happened in committee today when this was put up for a vote?
Well, this morning we had our meeting for the Natural Resources Committee in the House, and we were able to defeat the Democrat majority's outrageous rules change. You know, they wanted to delete, so help me God, that all-important phrase that dates back to the founding era of our country from the oath that's taken by witnesses who appear and testify before Congress. It's outrageous. It's almost unbelievable that they've gone that far, but they did. And they felt the pressure over the last 24 hours. This made the news, and people began to take notice. And so they withdrew the amendment and agreed to keep it as is. But I tell you, if it were not for the voices of concerned citizens and your listeners and so many other people who weighed in on this, we might have lost that cherished tradition. And that's how close we are really to unraveling the very fabric of the nation.
That's a great point, because some people would have just, you know, kind of said, oh, it's not a big deal. But of course, when this came to your attention Monday night, along with Garrett Graves, who was on the program yesterday, who happens to be my congressman, I know he texted me late Monday night with this information. Y'all were shocked about it, and it required you actually amending it to put it back in. But I understand that the pressure, you went to the House floor yesterday, spoke about it. As you said, the pressure was building. They did a manager's amendment, as I understand, and fixed this without you having to put the amendment forward. Is that correct?
That's right. The chairman of the committee is Grijalva. He's a Democrat. And he began the meeting. He addressed it right up front, and he said, "Listen, this was an error on our part." And we looked at each other and said, "Well, that's the understatement of the century." But they withdrew it, and they agreed to change it, and we had a little bit of an exchange about it. It was a very civil discussion, but we pointed out, I and others, Republicans on our side, said that we can't give up these cherished traditions. I mean, this is literally a practice. The use of the phrase, "so help me God," literally dates back to the Revolutionary period. And, I mean, every president throughout our history, every elected official have taken this solemn oath of office that we take and concluded with those same words. You go back to the Judiciary Act of 1789, Tony. Since that time, every justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, all lower court judges, have taken an oath that includes the same phrase. And, of course, every witness in every courtroom across America takes an oath with the same phrase. The naturalization of our citizens, the oath of allegiance that one takes to become a naturalized citizen, concludes with the same phrase. And yet we have Democrats in Congress who want to remove that cherished tradition. It's not just symbolism. It's about who we are as Americans. It makes an important statement. And you know, we pointed all that out. We had some, I think, healthy discussion in the committee, and hopefully they have resolved not to try this again for some time.
Well, first off, Mike Johnson, I want to commend you for taking this seriously and leading the charge on this and bringing the attention to it, which, you know, when we stand up, they usually back down because they don't have a lot of ground to stand on. But this is not, you know, it was a mistake. It was not a mistake. I mean, as you look at the language, at the rules that they submitted, they had to intentionally put this in parentheses and in red to remove it. But this is the left, and I think people need to realize that going back to the traditional, where the term left came from was the French Revolution, where the liberals set on the left, and they have this hatred for God and the accountability that comes from him. In fact, their target in the French Revolution was the church, whereas in the United States, in the American Revolution, the fuel behind it was the church. But the left today has its sights set on the church. When I mean the church, religious expression in the public square.
Well, that's right. And the reason for that is, of course, with the push towards socialism and an all-encompassing government that controls every aspect of our lives, you know, totalitarianism and tyranny, it always begins with the elimination of religious expression, with religious freedom, which is why we spend so much of our time and energy defending that cherished freedom that we have. Because when you take religious liberty away from a people, their political freedom soon follows. And that is the agenda of some people who now, there's a handful of people serving in Congress who have that agenda. I mean, they're openly discussing it now. We've got to be more vigilant than we've ever been before. We do have to raise our voices and raise the alarm when it's appropriate, like this was. And the encouraging thing, as you said, Tony, is we can still make that have that effect and make change when it's necessary.
Well, Mike Johnson, I have a prediction to make. This was just one of many battles that are going to have to be fought over the next 2 years over these fundamental freedoms and expressions.
You're exactly right.
Mike, thanks so much for joining us. And again, great job. Appreciate what you're doing there on Capitol Hill. All right. Find out more. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. You know, Russo would be proud of today's Democrats on the left. Okay. When we come back, we're going to go to the phone lines to talk about something in particular, but I'm going to set the stage when we come back. Don't go away.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy, from unicorns to the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. In FRC's analysis, 10 Myths on Abortion, join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to our other free resources, go to frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. All right, a lot going on, a lot to cover. I want to go back to this to New York, not to talk about abortion per se, but to read you a quote from Governor Andrew Cuomo. And this is what he said. He's a Catholic. You may have heard a lot of this. There's been calls for him to be excommunicated from the Catholic Church. Baptists do things differently. You know, they just go to another Baptist church. In this particular, and then it become a problem there. But in this particular case, he's Catholic, and of course the Catholic. Let me just say this about the Catholics. The Catholic Church in particular, I am so grateful for the Catholic Church and the stand historically that they've had on life and continue to have on the life issue. Now, I think it's gotten a little muddled in the last few years on some of the other things, but they've stuck to Scripture when it comes to these the great moral issues of our day. And I will tell you, there would not be a pro-life movement if it were not for the Catholic Church. That has been the issue. They are the ones that really brought this to the forefront, this battle for the sanctity of human life. Evangelicals joined later, but they were slow. And so I'm grateful for my Catholic brothers and sisters who have really helped get this the whole life movement moving, the crisis pregnancy center movement, all of that. I'm very grateful for them. And so the Catholic Church is clearly identified with the sanctity of human life. And Cuomo holds himself out to be a Catholic, and there are those now calling for him to be excommunicated. Well, this is what he said in response to that. Quote, "I have my own Catholic beliefs, how I live my life. That is my business as a Catholic. I don't govern as a Catholic. I don't legislate as a Catholic," end quote. This is a problem, all right? This is my personal life versus my private life. This is the idea that we can compartmentalize, or that there's this dichotomy that what we do in private has nothing to no bearing upon what we do in public. That's false. Our worldview is defined by what we believe. If you're a Christian, if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, your worldview is going to be shaped by your faith. Now, that doesn't mean we legislate biblical, you know, biblical laws, but if you are a follower of Jesus Christ, your worldview is instructed by, guided by Scripture, if you're truly following Jesus Christ. Now, that, some say, well, that's a problem. Maybe. But when you hold yourself out to be a person of faith, when you're running for office, that gives people a glimpse into your character, and your character matters. And so what you do in private matters, because it will manifest itself in public. And when voters make a choice, they look at the character of an individual, especially those who are running for office that have no track record. And so they, if they say, I'm a Catholic, and I believe the teachings of the Catholic Church, they're going to assume that that person is going to hold to a pro-life position. So if he is not informed by his Catholic faith, what is he informed by? This idea that there is this this neutral ground to where we can step into a public role and be absent of in that position, be absent of any type of moral guidance. I mean, where does he draw it from? You're going to draw, you cannot check your faith at the door of public service. And of course, that's why those on the left are so enraged by Christians, like we saw just last week with the vice president's wife. They do not want anyone with faith to step into that public square, because our lives are informed by our faith, and it should be. It can't be any other way, and we don't need to apologize for that. Don't need to step back from that. We have every right in America to be in public office and advocate for the sanctity of human life. We have every right to step into the public square and hold a position of trust in office and advocate for biblical morality. Because everyone has a worldview. It comes from something. Either it comes from a moral understanding of the moral law of God, or it comes from a humanist worldview. Each have every right to bring their viewpoint to the table when it comes to our public policy, debate it, and that which makes the most sense, and that which has history behind it, and that which the people agree to, prevails. Now, the culture has been turning such that it is doing everything it can to undermine a biblical moral worldview. And that's why we see this happening. But this is the kind of stuff you're going to see more of. You'll see, you know, wolves in sheep clothing, which is what I would call Cuomo. You know, he's wanting to wear the wool of a Catholic, but really it's the fur of a wolf underneath there. This is what we'll see more of. Blatant anti-life, anti-moral policies. All right. We're going to go to the phone lines. 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Virginia, where Terry is on the line. Terry, welcome to Washington Watch.
Good evening, Tony. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
Yes, so I had a question about the taking of the oath, where they say, so help me God. I know I read in the Bible where Jesus said that not to swear by heaven or by God, not to swear, you know, let your yea be yea and your nay be nay. So I'm wondering if it does not seem hypocritical for Christians to demand the right to do something that Jesus said we are not supposed to do, or am I missing something?
Well, it has always been an option where those that do not want to take an oath in the name of God can just say they're not doing it. But what we see in this case is that it's completely stricken from the rules. And that's long been the case. I mean, anyone can take an affirmation versus an oath. And that's been for those that want to join the military or anything else. So that accommodation has always been made. But there is a recognition, and I think that's the point here, that there is a higher authority than man himself.
Okay, well, thank you for that input. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks for the call, Terry. Appreciate it. Let's go to Lisa in Texas. Lisa, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thanks, Tony. You know, just listening to Governor Cuomo and how he talks about his Catholicism, isn't the way he governs. I mean, I really have never understood why abortion was a religious issue in the first place. I didn't become a Christian until 12 years ago, but I've always been pro-life ever since I took a genetics 101 class. And, you know, a person's a person, no matter how small. And if you're against murder, you know, it baffles me. I don't understand the reasoning behind it. It doesn't seem to me to be a religious issue. It's just a matter of if you're against murder issue.
Lisa, you're absolutely right. In fact, it is not a religious issue. It is a moral issue. It's not a religious issue. It is a moral issue. And that's why we've actually seen in our law, the natural law was long a standard by which we appealed to in this country. And of course, that's being eradicated, the idea that there's natural law, which is essentially the moral law of God that's written on the hearts of men. And as you pointed out, killing is wrong, no matter how small. And so it is not a religious issue, but it is a moral issue. But someone who claims to have a religious faith, but says, I'm not going to allow that faith to affect how I govern, is not being true to that faith or not being true to the American people.
True.
Lisa, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it. Very good point. It is it's actually a very important point that Lisa brings up. Because there are some on the other side that say, well, the only reason you'll argue for this is it's a religious issue. It is a moral issue, but it's not a religious issue. And it is inscribed upon the moral law. Like Paul wrote about this in Romans chapter 2. He talks about it being inscribed on their hearts. They didn't have the law, but it was inscribed on their hearts. And we know, and a moral law is one that is the same in all places for all people at all times. And everybody knows it's wrong to kill. And that's why it took the Supreme Court to force this on the nation 46 years ago to say that a mother can kill her unborn child. I mean, people are outraged when an animal is killed, but yet they allow a mother to, well, it's a choice. I mean, it is a repression and suppression of what we know to be true and to be right. Lisa, thanks so much for the call. Very good point that you bring up. Let's go to Todd in Louisiana. Todd, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks, Tony, for taking my call. I'm listening to a lot of rhetoric around the country and in the world in general. We have, I could say, a moral problem. And what I'm saying is this country was built on Christianity. And if you don't like it, why don't you get out of this country? You see, we have twisted the word of God here. You know, he says, woe to them who call evil good and good evil. But Tony, you got to take this further than that. You got to take it to Washington. We are fighting a spiritual battle here in America. And the people that don't like Christianity, you're free to move. Get out this country. We are built on Christianity. God is here in America, and we need to keep him alive. from hang up Todd, when you listen to you. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Todd, for the call. I would agree that we are in a spiritual battle. But here's one point I disagree with you on. I don't want the people to leave. I want them to stay here and hear the truth and their hearts to be transformed by that truth. I want America once again to embrace the truth. Now, there's never a point in history of America where everybody was a believer. But there was a time in history when the principles of the Judeo-Christian faith dominated, and it was the guiding factor of the guiding principles of our country. It was a time when everybody benefits from those truths, even those who don't subscribe to them necessarily. I believe what is required is, yes, it is a spiritual battle. We need to be praying. We need to be fasting. We need to be seeking the face of God, but we need to be standing for truth. We need to be sharing the truth. We need a revival. We need a revival in the church, and we need a reformation of our culture as there is an awakening among the people. That's what America truly needs. And I believe God has given us a window of opportunity under the policies of this administration to be able to live out our faith in such a way that is a testimony to the truth. We cannot miss this moment because it may not come again. Todd, thanks so much for that call. Let's go to Daniel in Kansas. Daniel, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, thank you. I appreciate your show. It's really encouraging. And so I'm a Catholic, and I'm from upstate New York originally. I've been in Kansas 35 years, and I love it here. But anyway, so as a Catholic, Cardinal Dolan, I heard the interview today on AFR with him on the early morning show, and he says he doesn't think it would do any good. Basically, he got around to saying that it wouldn't do any good to excommunicate Mario Cuomo, you know. But it would, because, see, there's many, many Catholics and many other people. I wouldn't say they're sitting on the fence, but they're people that, well, if the governor of New York State can do this and not get in any trouble, you know, other Catholics, and then I guess abortion isn't such a big deal, you know. So there's a greater good to be had. Yes. That Cardinal Dolan is missing by not using this canonical ability to cut off Cuomo from communion with the church. He could instruct the pastor of his parish, wherever Cuomo goes, I don't know, not to give him Holy Communion. And I understand from talking to Stacy on the right, I called in a week ago about the same thing, that Mrs. Pelosi has been refused Holy Communion. She's Catholic also because of her... because of the abortion, supporting abortion. So
this is,
the church has...
Daniel, yeah. I don't want to cut you off, but we're running out of time. We're almost out of time, and I want to say this to your comment. The church has a role, an instructive role to play in this, of holding up a standard of what is absolutely right, a transcendent truth which they've been entrusted with from Scripture. Daniel, thank you for the call. Folks, sorry, there's several other callers I didn't get to today. Obviously, this is a topic that is important and one that you care about. And we may return to this tomorrow. So stand by. We'll be back tomorrow. I hope you will as well. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.